Welcome to the 100th episode of Court Appointed.
That means we've done 99 up until this one.
Exactly. And celebrating this milestone, we thought we would do something special and bring to you our live episode, which we recorded at the Columbus Podcast Festival on May 12th of this year.
They were great hosts to us in Columbus, and we greatly enjoyed being there.
It was a good time. So in the meantime, OH.
I-O.
Exactly.
Well, good evening. Yeah. Welcome to Columbus Podcast Festival. Yes, year number two. This year, our event is presented by Kaufman Development, where high design and a sense of belonging come together for a truly special place to live. We've already gone through the ground rules. You guys are ready, right? Yes? So help me welcome Court Appointed.
Basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia.
Welcome to Court Appointed, two dudes' perspective on legal frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
So before we came out, we were trying to figure out where we were going to sit, because usually when we podcast, we look at each other.
Yeah, that works better when I can read his lips. Well, how's everybody doing in Columbus? Columbus is a home to so many fun things. We went to Cosi today and got to check it out. You got, the Columbus Blue Jackets watch and everything. You got one of the best rock and roll venues in the world with Rock on the Range. Avenged Sevenfold and what? Asking Alexandria? We don't have any fans of them?
Don't feel bad, guys. That's the same response he got from me when he said that. I was like, what are you talking about? Little known fact, I actually lived in Columbus for a year. I did my first year of law school here back in 99. So it seems like it's kind of changed a lot downtown. It seems much more like a lot more going on these days. It's pretty cool.
Well, it's a great city. Charlie said when she drove in and saw everything all around, she said, I think we need to move here.
Well, anyway, I wanted to thank Columbus Podcast Festival for having us back. It's awesome to be back. This is our second year. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, and our second live show.
It is our second live show. After you do the first one, you've done so many, it just feels like whatever.
Yeah, it just feels like the second. Or in the quoting the song, it feels like the first time.
It's true. So if you haven't listened if you haven't listened to our podcast before, there's going to be a lot of kind of 70s music references and dad jokes. I'm just going to prepare you for that one.
I don't know where that comes from.
Thank you all for coming out tonight. It's awesome to have this crowd here. So we were trying to think of what a good topic to do live would be, and seeing as we were in Columbus, we thought we'd come up with something really topical and go with pirates. And pirate law.
Pirates and pirate law.
That's got a link to Columbus, doesn't it? The Pirates of the Olentangy?
I don't know.
So as far as pirates, there's actually a pretty rich...
Army, matey. We be armed and ready to go. I've played the good Captain Hook several times in Peter Pan, and you got to be prepared.
I knew Tommy had played Hook before on what is the show called, Hook? Or that's the movie.
Well, it should have been. But they gave it to the little guy, Peter Pan.
Oh, yeah, Peter Pan is the name of the show.
I'll get you, Peter Pan.
So I knew.
And your little dog, Toto. No, that's the wrong one. I'm confusing him.
I knew he had played Hook before, so I figured that Hook was going to come out. So I brought a prop of my own.
Well, I don't get to use it that often, so you might as well.
Uh-huh.
Well, you're either that or a colonial guy. I don't know.
Well, the only thing I really knew about pirates, kind of, I always had like kind of a fascination with them growing up. I thought they were pretty cool. I always played the Sid Meier video game Pirates on the Xbox, and I still have that disc, and I carry it around wherever I go. I don't even have an Xbox anymore, and I haven't played that game in years, but I cannot throw that game away because I love it so much. You would just kind of go around and plunder the seas. It was pretty fun.
Do you know how pirates know they're pirates?
How's that?
They think, therefore they are.
All right, pirate jokes. But historically speaking, pirates do have a bit of a kind of a rich history with regards to law and different things like that. Pirates actually had their own code, if you knew that or not.
The pirate code.
And contrary to what they said in Pirates of the Caribbean, it was not more of a suggestion. It was an actual thing that they actually followed, I think, to a certain degree. They were actually credited with being the first ones to come up with workers' compensation law. Workers' compensation law is what happens whenever you're hurt on the job, which every state has that now. And it's basically if you are hurt while you're performing your job, then there's a system of insurance to help you pay for your medical coverage, and also if you're disabled or something like that to help you back. Now, pirates actually came up with this. This is the first place in history where you actually see it is in the pirate code.
They actually put a price on the different things you saw missing. When they were missing an arm, they got paid a certain price for that. If they missed a leg, they got a price for that. But they actually took a cut of the booty that they got and gave it to them for what they lost. And they even had certain ratios, like a right arm was worth more than a left arm. And if you lost both of them, that was worth more than each one individually. So they were very sophisticated. Now I think some of them, that's why they were like that. They were picking up extra cash.
I got a mortgage payment coming due. Somebody lop off my left arm. I don't need that one. So it's really, they were kind of, trendsetters in that fashion. So.
Yeah, trendsetters.
That and the puffy shirts.
Peg legs, hooks.
Now, the other thing about pirates, aside from their code, and one of the interesting things is that while pirates in their time were generally reviled, there was actually someone who performed a function very similar to pirates during that time, but they were actually kind of authorized by their own governments to do that. And they were called privateers, or sometimes it was called a corsair. So the etymology of the different words, so pirate is the first term that we use the most, and it comes from a Greek word, pirates, which means brigand. So you can see kind of the similar connotation there. And basically that was for the term used for anybody who is basically a thief on the seas. If you didn't have a boat and you were just robbing somebody, you're just a robber. But if you're on the seas and do it, you're a pirate. Now, a privateer was essentially a pirate who had papers which allowed them to do that. And the papers which allowed them to do that were what were called letters of mark.
It's like Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, the Beatles.
No. No, letters of mark were something that were actually given by a government, and which allowed these different privateers, not necessarily pirates, but allowed them to go out and essentially rob people or hold them up in certain areas.
Now they call them the IRS.
Now, the letters of mark, basically, they had certain things they usually had them. They named the person who was authorized to pass beyond the borders with forces under their command. It specified the different nationalities that they were allowed to target. It authorized the seizure or destruction of assets of target nationality. It describes the offense for which commission is issued as a reprisal, because usually these letters of mark had to do with like getting back at somebody. It was kind of like a payback. It's like, oh, issue a letter of mark against him. We'll give him a payback. And then basically it was also restricted to time, manner, place, or amount of reprisal. So you can only do a little pirating.
And I like the way that the government put in the percentage of what you robbed, you had to pay to them.
Yeah, they got their cut.
Yeah. Therefore, that was the motivation to issue the letter.
Now, the word mark, and for whatever reason, I decided to kind of delve into etymology with a lot of different words in this podcast. I don't usually do that. But mark was kind of interesting. It comes from the old English word, miark. Maybe that's how you say that? I don't know. But anyway, which means boundary or boundary marker. And also from the word merg, meaning boundary or border. And the French word mark is from a provincial language, marca, which means seize as a pledge. So you can kind of see where that word comes from if you look at the basis of it, that mark actually means like a kind of a certain area where you can actually take things. So
it's an authorized taking of things.
Yeah, kind of like the government can do still.
That's right.
Now, the first use of these letters of mark, or reprisal, which was sometimes called as well, was in an English statute in 1354 during the reign of Edward III. And the phrase referred to as a license granted by a sovereign to a subject, authorizing him to make reprisals on the subjects of a hostile state for injuries alleged to have been done to him by the enemy's army. So it's a long, rich history.
It's a long, rich history of government authorized robbery.
Yes. Actually, it is also authorized in our United States Constitution, which I did not even realize this till I started researching this. But if you go into Article 1, Section 8, Clause 11, it reads that Congress shall have the power to declare war, grant letters of mark and reprisal, and make rules concerning captures on land and water. So basically, piracy is allowed in our Constitution. I mean, who knew?
And it actually was brought up not that long ago.
When was that?
During the 9/11 terrorist attacks, Ron Paul presented to the Senate that he was trying to get letters of mark issued for people to go after the terrorists as opposed to declaring war.
Really? I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like a Charles Bronson-esque type vengeance plan?
Yeah, soldiers of war there or something like that.
I saw a couple articles where on the internet people were kind of trying to drum up support for letters of mark to go after different terrorists and things like that and things in the Middle East. It seemed like it was mainly more libertarian type propaganda type stuff.
It never went anywhere, but it was talked about.
Yeah. Well, I guess there's a possibility you could apply for a letter of mark, you know, present day and say, hey, I want to go pillage some country's ships.
We don't like them. And
I have a boat.
You give me my letter to pillage, I'll vote for you.
You have a hook. I got a hat.
All we need is a boat.
Yeah, we're good to go.
Yeah, we got the big stuff. You know how much a pirate had to pay for his piercings? A buccaneer.
Didn't know that.
True thing. True story.
Sitting here trying to grind my gears, thinking about, like, what could that possibly be? I don't know. But unfortunately, I think letters of mark may have somewhat been banned by the Treaty of Paris and the 1856 Paris Declarations. So actually, letters of mark were banned by that. But here's the caveat. The U.S. didn't sign that.
Well, we can catch all the rest of them now.
That's right. So we can still have letters of mark as allowed in our Constitution and be pirates or privateers or corsairs or buccaneers.
Whatever name you like best, huh?
Exactly. So do you know when the last time supposedly a letter of mark was used in the United States?
Well, no, I can't say as I do.
Well, as I was researching letters of mark, legend has it that in December of 1941 and the first months of 1942, there was a Goodyear blimp named Resolute, which operated as an anti-submarine privateer based out of Los Angeles. And it was the only U.S. craft to operate under a letter of mark since the War of 1812. It said the Resolute was armed with a rifle and flown by its civilian crew patrolling the seas for submarines.
So the Goodyear blimp, with a rifle, was issued a letter of mark.
That's what I read on the internet.
Well, then it has to be true.
So I thought, this sounds really cool. Like, could this possibly have happened? So I did a bit more research, and actually I found out it was a little too cool to be true, I think. There was no recorded instances of a letter of mark being issued to a Goodyear blimp Resolute. So, and I started thinking about the fact that, well, actually, Goodyear blimps were built near here in Akron, Ohio. So that was kind of cool. But I started thinking about the fact that that's a pretty big target up there flying around. And in World War II, those weapons were pretty accurate. I could see him poking a few holes in that thing.
All you need is a guy with a blow dart, and that would have been the end of it.
All the humanity! but anyway, privateering and things like that, you can actually kind of contrast that with pirating, and really the only difference is they had kind of a formal letter allowing them to do it. It was basically the same thing, and a lot of the acts they did were pretty much the same. So,
do you know how pirates communicate with each other?
How?
With an iPhone.
Do you have like a whole stock of these things set up just to interject it?
No, I just have them in my memory categories there for pirate topics.
I actually do have a pirate joke memorized. I did not prepare for this.
You didn't, huh?
No, I didn't.
Oh, okay.
It's a funny story. I was actually out at a bar one time with my friends. We were hanging out, and in walks a guy dressed like a pirate. And he proceeded to regale us with pirate jokes for about the next 30 minutes, drank a beer, and just left. It was pretty...
Was it Captain Morgan?
Might have been Admiral Nelson. I don't know who it was. No, it was pretty surreal, though. We were kind of like, did that just happen?
Was it a ghost?
It might have been. He sure drank that beer pretty quick. So, do you know what a pirate's favorite...
He probably went right through him if he was a ghost.
Do you know what a pirate's favorite letter is?
R.
You think it'd be R, but it's actually the C.
The C?
That's my one and only pirate joke I have, so...
He spends years on the sea, right?
Hello, we hope you don't mind that we slipped in this quick break from our live show.
Yeah, we actually had to duck backstage really quickly to freshen up because doing a live podcast is hard work under those hot spotlights.
That's right, and you want to look your best.
In order to look your best, you need Dollar Shave Club.
DollarShaveClub.com has been our special sponsor since way back, and we're glad to have them with us here on episode number 100.
That's right. They're our very special sponsor for our very special episode.
Dollar Shave Club, they cover you from head to toe and all spots in between, which mostly means your butt.
If you ever shower or brush your teeth or try to make your hair look presentable, which I do from time to time, we've got good news for you. Dollar Shave Club has lots of stuff to help you out.
Dollar Shave Club delivers everything you need to look, feel, and smell your best. Dollar Shave Club has everything you need to get ready in the bathroom. You no longer have to go to that aisle in the store because any particular product that you have fallen in love with outside of the razor is found at Dollar Shave Club.
That's right. They have everything you need to look, feel, and smell your best. You name it. Shampoo, conditioner, body wash, toothpaste, hair gel. Whew. Even a wipe that'll leave your tush feeling tingly clean.
Ooh, that's tingly. I'm a big fan of their amber and lavender calming body cleanser because Lord knows I need calming from time to time.
You do.
I never smelled anything like it in a good way. Good luck finding a product that great at the store.
And the thing about Dollar Shave Club's products is they're made with top shelf ingredients that won't break your budget. You'll feel the difference. Plus, shipping is included with your membership.
And here's a great way to try a bunch of Dollar Shave Club's products. For just $5, you can get their Daily Essential Starter Set. It comes with body cleanser, One Wipe Charlie's, their amazing butt wipes, their world-famous shave butter, and their best razor, the Six Blade Executive.
Keep the blades coming for a few more bucks a month, and add in shampoo, toothpaste, or anything else you need for the bathroom. Check it all out at dollarshaveclub.com/court.
The R, mateys, that's dollarshaveclub.com/court. Arg.
Good to hear.
One of my favorite privateers, do you know who that is by any chance?
Privateer? No. Who's your favorite privateer?
Sir Francis Drake.
Sir Francis Drake?
Yeah.
I thought Drake was a duck or a goose or something.
He's a rapper.
A rapper?
That'd be more temporally correct to save the rapper.
Drake is a rapper?
R&B artist?
I didn't, Sir Francis Drake wasn't a rapper.
He might have been. I don't know. We don't have any recordings of him.
Who knows what he did in his spare time, huh?
He was an OG.
Well, he was a real OG, yeah.
But you might not know this, but I actually have a very strong connection with Sir Francis Drake.
Yes?
Do you know what it is?
No, I do not.
I actually did...
And I thought I knew everything about you, and I do not know this.
I did a in-depth report on Sir Francis Drake in the sixth grade.
Well, that makes you an expert, then.
And when I say I did an in-depth report
your
on Sir Francis
did.
Drake in the sixth grade, I mean that your wife, Mary, did an in-depth report on Sir Francis Drake for me in the sixth grade.
She did a lot of those through her career raising children.
And when I
she
say,
won projects, she beat third graders hands down.
And when I say she did the project for me, she did it the night before it was due.
Oh, yeah. She's good at that, too.
She knocked it out of the park. The teacher was amazed. It was the best drawing of Sir Francis Drake that any sixth grader had ever done. And it was absolutely amazing.
And did you learn anything from it, though, or did you just take credit for it?
I learned that I can always count on my sister Mary to help me out of a jam.
Well, I thought you were going to elaborate on Sir Francis Drake after that.
No, that's about it. I didn't really learn anything.
Oh.
She did the work for me when I was there. I didn't learn anything. Well, I knew his ship was called the Golden Hind.
The Golden what?
The Golden Hind. H-I-N-D, Hind.
The Gold Behind.
No. The Booty.
That's a different story, yeah.
Yeah, it's a whole different story. So, yeah.
Well, I'll have to ask her about that.
He was the mayor of Plymouth.
The whole rock?
The whole rock. yeah. Sir Francis Drake.
Well, all right.
He's a member of Parliament.
Okay. You remember that? You learned something.
Yeah. He died of dysentery.
Died of dysentery. He didn't have too good a hygiene then, huh?
Nah, not really.
That's the way them pirates are.
Yeah. Dysentery. It always gets you in the end.
Thus the Golden Hind.
It's probably a little red. Oh.
I don't want to think about that.
So, you got anything to bring this podcast back around?
Well, I had a more sophisticated one that I looked at, and it was also I did my own research. I didn't have Mary do it for me. But it seems that letters of mark played much in a very famous captain's rise and his demise. Do you know what captain I might be speaking of? And I'm not talking about Captain Morgan or Captain Crunch or...
Captain Kirk.
Or Captain Kirk.
I don't know. Who is it?
You ever heard of Captain Kidd?
I have heard of Captain Kidd.
Captain Kidd. I never knew if he was real or not. Or was he just a myth?
Billy, right?
Well, yeah. Captain William Kidd. Billy,
was Billy.
But it's not Billy the Kid. It was William, but it wasn't Billy.
That's a prime example of a legal doctrine, which is called the tipsy coachman doctrine. And basically that means that you make some sort of legal argument, which isn't really right at all, but it gets you to the right end result. So there you go. Tipsy coachman doctrine right there.
It was a good guess.
Billy the pirate kid.
Captain Kidd was born in 1654. He was a Scottish sailor. And he moved to what later became New York City, although it wasn't New York City then because it was still...
Old York City.
Yeah, that's right. So he befriended lots of prominent citizens, including three governors. And in 1689, they commissioned him through letters of marque to go protect an island called Nevis from the French. And they basically said, we're not going to pay you. You can collect your money from the ships and the booty that you plunder. So they basically authorized him to become a pirate.
Privateer.
Well, a privateer, but he was known as a pirate. So they the governor commissioned him, the governor of Massachusetts, New Hampshire, and there's one other one in there somewhere, New York. Okay, so he commissioned him to go out and take on any French ships that he could find. So they proceeded on their voyage, but from the very beginning, they started out poorly. As they went to England, and they were leaving down the River Thames, and they crossed a Navy ship, and the tradition was you salute the Navy ship. Captain Kidd didn't feel like saluting him, so they fired a shot across his bow to warn him that he did not show the proper respect, and he had his crew come up on deck, and they all mooned the Navy ship.
Really?
So the Navy
and that's
him.
Where you get the term pirate booty.
So the Navy stopped him, and they took half of his men. Now, he started out with 150 men, so they just took half of them. So he didn't have enough crew to pirate this big ship that he had. So he went to New York, where he found a bunch of hardened criminals and former pirates to help fill out his crew, because everybody knows that's where you find them, is New York.
He had 150, they took half of them. That left him with 150 butt cheeks still to moon other people with.
That's true.
Okay.
Well, some of them had hooks. They didn't have both cheeks. They just didn't sit much. I don't know what you get for a butt cheek on the workers' comp scale. I'm not sure.
If a pirate lost a butt cheek, he gets a hook back there.
Yeah. Well, it's better than a peg leg. What are you going to do with that?
Sit anywhere you want.
So, as he went on, the crew was then struck with an outbreak of cholera, where they lost a third of their men after that. So it was becoming evident that their ambitious enterprise was failing. So as soon as they could, when they landed on the next shore, half his crew deserted that was left out of that, and the rest were making open threats of mutiny to him. So he was got into a conflict with one particular of his sailors, and he didn't like what the guy said, so he took an iron-bound bucket and broke it over the guy's head, and it also crushed the guy's skull, and he died. Now, they recognized, English admiralty law recognized, that sometimes captains had to exercise a certain amount of violence against their crew to keep them in line, but murder was outside those bounds of violence.
A little excessive.
But he felt like he had enough backers back there, prominent backers, that he would be all right.
Yeah.
They would take care of it. They would get him out. After all, he was acting on there. He had another letter of marque issued, actually, from King Edward III that he was sailing with. But soon after, in 1698, he reached Madagascar, and he ran into a pirate who had looted a ship from him earlier in his career, and all of his crew but 13 left him to go be with this other pirate. So he had to steal a different ship and head back home, because at this point he figured he was done.
He sounds like a horrible pirate.
Well, he was by this point.
Yeah.
It all started out with the mooning. The mooning was his demise, evidently.
It's like bringing a knife to a gunfight. He's like, oh, well, I'm going to moon him. Oh, yeah, we're going to shoot you.
Yeah, we're going to take half your people. So they headed back towards New York, and on the way he found out that they had warrants out for him. So he tried to evade running along different places along the shore, but eventually he was done in by a friend who contacted him and said, come on in. You'll have leniency. Don't worry. This was a prominent guy. So he came and turned himself in, and they arrested him. So they shipped him.
Switch.
That's right. They shipped him back to England, where he stood trial. Now, when he stood trial, they found him guilty of being a pirate, but they got the death penalty for murder, where he broke the bucket over the guy's head. Two people who were also being found guilty as pirates, they decided to tell him about him killing this guy, so they got clemency, and he got the death penalty. So they took him, and they went to hang him. And hanging him once was not good enough. They actually hung him twice, because the first time, the rope broke. And so a lot of the people in the audience, they were like, hey, the rope broke, you got to let him go. But they said, no, we'll hang him again. They said, it's a sign from God, the rope broke, you got to let him go.
It's divine intervention.
Yeah, but they didn't. It said 5 minutes later, they hung him again, and this time it took. So, and then just for good measure, they had his body gibbeted. And I had to look up what that is. Gibbeted means they tied it up in ropes and they hung it on a big arm out over the River Thames as a sign to anybody else that would commit piracy. And they said that they left it there for 3 years.
3 years?
3 years. There couldn't have been much left at the end of the 3 years.
No, that's a little excessive.
A little skull and crossbones or something like that. That's about it. But they said that Kidd's prominent backers were embarrassed by his trial. Far from rewarding his loyalty, they participated in the efforts to convict him by depriving him of money and information which might have provided him with some legal defense. In particular, two sets of letters of marque had been missing at his trial. These passes and others dated 1700 resurfaced in the early 20th century, misfiled with other government papers in a London building. These passes call the extent of Kidd's guilt into question.
Well, I was going to say, from the little excerpt you told us about that, it doesn't sound like he was really much into pirating, just kind of like bashing people over the head with buckets. That was like his...
Well, that was the one that did him in. Now, he did some pirating and privateering in his early days. I didn't figure everybody wanted to hear the entire story of his career, so I was trying to just hit the high points.
Those are the high points?
Well, or the low points, depending on how you look. But they had the most to do with the letters of marque, and that's supposed to be our topic.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, pirates.
And he had letters of marque, but they didn't show up at his trial, and that's why he was killed.
That's true. That makes me think of the scene from The Naked Gun where Leslie Nielsen's kind of going through his desk, and he's like pulling things out, and he goes, my God, I forget what he says. My God, he was innocent. It's like, he was put to death 3 years ago, Frank. Oh.
So, too late now.
Yeah. I wonder if that was actually some sort of conspiracy, if it was just your general ineptitude.
I think it was a conspiracy.
You think so?
Yeah, the ones behind it, these prominent people that were involved because he had brought embarrassment to them. So they let him be taken and didn't do anything to save him.
Like, oh, what should we do these letters of marque? We'll just stick them in the Smith file.
Put them in that circular file over there. That's right.
I think back then they just would have gotten rid of them. I mean, there's easy to destroy stuff back then.
Well, they probably wanted to keep it because it had the king's autograph on it. That might be worth something someday on eBay.
The king's autograph.
Yeah, King William III or Edward III or whatever the guy was. I wasn't around back then, contrary to popular thought.
With your hook?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, does anybody have any legal questions or anything? We usually don't do questions at our live show, and by usually I mean the one time we did it before. But we thought today it might be kind of fun to open it up to some legal questions. Now, here is the disclaimer. These legal questions cannot be actual legal advice about how to sue your roommate for stealing your frozen pizza or things like that. It's just kind of just general legal knowledge, not actual ask a lawyer type stuff. And also, I know if you're fans of my brother and me, whenever they have their whenever they have their live shows, they have the no bummer policy. So no bummer legal questions either. So anybody have a question? Yes. Yeah, that's actually true. We actually did an episode on that while ago.
The question was, in case you can't hear it on the recording.
Oh, yeah, I probably should do that, shouldn't I?
All you people out in radio land.
Oh, and also, as a legal disclaimer, you should know, we are recording this.
Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. But there is any legal, the question was about whether any legal precedent involving ghosts and the reality of ghosts.
Yeah, so we did an episode about this a while ago, and there was a house that was sold, and I think it was advertised as being haunted. And I think the court, if I remember correctly, the court actually, they had a whole hearing about it, and the person wanted to try to overturn the sale, I think, because it was sold, is that?
Right. Well, the guy had actually sold tours that before he sold the house.
Yeah,
he did
right.
Tours in the house advertising as being haunted. So then when he sold it to somebody, I guess, from out of town who didn't know they were buying a haunted house. So when they found out, they said, I don't want this house. I want you to take it back. You didn't tell me it was haunted. And he was like, well, there's no such thing as ghosts. But they said, hey, look. You advertised there were ghosts. You sold tickets to people to come to see the ghosts. There's ghosts. I give them this house back.
Yeah, yeah. I think that was the whole thing that the guy's basis to try to change the contract was that, hey, I found out this place was haunted, and you didn't tell me it was haunted. And that was his basis to try to, like, overturn the contract. And because the seller had actually held it out to be haunted before, they were kind of the legal term would be estopped or estoppel. They were estopped from saying, no, it's not haunted, because they had already said it was. So it's one of those, you can't change your mind on something like that. So,
so there's legal proof that ghosts exist.
Right.
That's not what that means?
Not exactly. Oh. Does anybody else have any questions out there? Any legal questions?
Or illegal questions?
Nope. We have a microphone now.
Oh,
oh, come on up to the mic. Now we don't have to repeat it.
Hi.
Hi.
So I know I can't sell a kidney.
Are they that bad?
But if...
Hold on, hold on. I know a guy.
He's a pirate.
But if I were to make an arrangement with somebody over a kidney or a living liver donor, because you can do a lobe of your liver as well.
You've done some investigation into this.
Is it allowable for there to be compensation from the recipient and their family?
That is an interesting question. Legally speaking, now, I mean, if you have some sort of black market organ site where you sell your organs online, first of all, I don't want to know about it.
It's on the dark web.
Second of all, but I guess the real question is, I mean, yeah, you might be have some agreement where you could do that, I guess, but I think, number one, I think it might be criminal to do that. I'm not certain. But the other thing, too, is that if it is, in fact, criminal, especially depending on how you do it, you can't actually enforce a contract that would be illegal. So even if you sell a kidney, there's no legal means to try to make somebody pay up, would be, I guess, the long and the short of it.
If they did pay up.
Okay.
Would that income then have to be cleaned up?
Oh, you mean laundered?
It would have to be declared.
Yeah, I think... I'd have to check the IRS code, and I am not a tax lawyer and do not give tax advice, but I do believe that would be a taxable event.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Organ donations are not tax deductible. Thank you.
Federal income tax is generally one of the harder classes in law school, and I actually managed to make a good grade in that class somehow by just using the term taxable event over and over, very authoritatively, just like that. So... if you ever ask a question about it, like, I don't think that sounds like a taxable event. Or that is a taxable event.
Hey, do you know what has 8 legs, 8 arms, and 8 eyes?
I don't.
8 pirates.
The pirate jokes.
Any other questions? I thought I saw another hand up.
Or a hook? Oh, that's not a hook, that's a hand. I kind of like this question-answer format.
Making
it's
his
fun.
Way up here, yes. Come on down. All right.
Again, hypothetical question.
You guys are smart learners. You're catching on quick.
What are you
hypothetically
selling?
Speaking?
Are there any circumstances under which I, a citizen who is not working in security or law enforcement, can perform a citizen's arrest? What is
a
that?
Citizen's arrest. Well, there are some sort of laws out there which allow you to do that. I think if you're coming to defense of others, or I think there are some laws at common law, and let me explain what common law is. Common law is law that was handed down from England. And basically, we don't really have common law in the United States anymore. I mean, there is some of it. But each law is essentially codified by each state. So when I say common law, I'm kind of speaking about law that doesn't really exist anymore, but it's actually the basis for most of the laws we have. So at common law, there was an ability to perform a citizen's arrest if you saw someone in the commission of a felony, I believe. But I would check with your local laws before performing any such citizen's arrest. The one I always wanted to know about was actually if you could, the police officers, whenever they have to seize a car in their hot pursuit. I always thought that sounded pretty cool. Kind of similar
vein. Somebody sent something in on the Facebook page recently that said there was a code still on the books in whatever city or state they were in that said you are required to assist lawmen when they are arresting somebody or in need or something like that.
Yeah, I forget where that was. And there also is a duty to defend other people. You have a duty to defend your spouse and I believe your children.
But duty.
It's not a podcast complete without Tommy making a duty joke. It always catches me off guard too. Yeah, so
you have a duty. You have a duty.
But anyway, you have a duty to defend your spouse or your children, things like that. But you don't have a duty to defend like a stranger on the street usually. So, but hope that answered your question somewhat.
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. And if you feel like arresting somebody tonight, just make sure somebody records it because it's always good to put those on the internet.
Hey, do you know why pirates make great lawyers?
Why is that?
Because they have good arguments.
God. They're kind of going downhill a little bit. Oh. Although, that was a lawyer-related pirate joke.
I know, that's why I saved it for last.
Oh, that was last?
Yeah, that was
my last
pirate joke. I skipped the one that said, what's orange and sounds like a parrot?
What's that?
A carrot. It didn't seem as relevant as the others.
Slightly relevant.
Just like me.
Does anybody else have any other legal questions? Yes? These are much more fun legal questions than people actually coming to my office. Talking about ghosts and arresting people. Selling organs.
What would you say is the strangest law you've seen still on the books that's actually something someone has asked about?
Oh, that someone's asked about? That's a little bit more difficult. I found some really strange ones on the books that no one's ever asked about. The one that keeps popping in my head is actually my personal favorite. So we're from Huntington, West Virginia, and in Huntington, there's actually a law, the municipal law in the book, which makes it a fine to wear a hat in a theater, and that's actually still on the books. So, and I think whenever you see a law, you try to think about the rationale for it. I remember, I don't remember this, but people back in the days of yore would wear these big hats. So I imagine, you go pay money to go into a theater, and some nearly do well or whatever that word is. I don't know how you say it.
Yeah, look what happened to Abraham Lincoln when he wore his. Is it too soon?
So, yeah, that's that would probably be one of the more strange ones that actually I saw that I kind of had hit close to home and I liked.
The ones that surprised me the most are the states that are just now coming around and they're banning sex with animals. Why did it take till now? Was it like, we don't talk about it, but, as long as you keep it to yourself, I don't know. You'd think that's just a given.
You'd think? I don't know.
You don't want to come up with any more of those pig boys like we talked about on that one show.
Yeah, we don't talk about that show.
That was like back in the 1800s, and they held the pig up and they said, look, it looks just like him. He had to have something to do with this. And he was convicted.
Yeah, that was before DNA.
Well, we had DNA, we just didn't know what to do with it.
That's true. You got me there. There was DNA, and yeah, that's about all I'll say about that. So
if you see an animal that looks like your neighbor, check the laws, you might have to report it.
I will say that bestiality and that sex with animals is illegal in West Virginia, I do believe. It's against the law, so hold all your West Virginia jokes.
However, you can eat your roadkill. They have okayed that.
Yeah. Well, I feel pretty strongly about that. Let me go on a little tirade here. Now, if you're driving along and a deer jumps out in front of your car and smashes your car, the least you can do is get a couple of tenderloins and steaks out of it. That's the way I look at it.
I guess that's what you'd call a grilled deer.
Yep. Well, thank you for your question.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, I think we probably have time for maybe one more question, if anybody has one. Yes, right there.
Quite an orderly group. I like the way you raise your hands one at a time.
That's so nice. Very nice.
That way it takes the pressure off of us picking.
Let me quickly preface this. This is not a joke.
this sounds like...
I need legal help right now.
This sounds like a joke.
No. Trust me. So I go to college up in Cleveland, and I've seen on multiple occasions this guy always barefoot, always carrying a hammer. And I guess my question is, what are... like open carry weapon laws, because it's very frightening every time you see it.
Oh, you're talking about the shoeless carpenter. I know that guy. He's a great roofer.
Is it Jesus?
I'm pretty sure it's not.
He's making sure we don't want to arrest the second coming.
He's also, the thing, it's not Jesus. The thing he left out is he's got a 22 ounce of Natty Daddy in his other hand as he's walking along down the street. Open carry laws are kind of different. I did see a case recently there's a smaller town next to Huntington called Canova, and some guy was arrested for having some brass knuckles on him, and that was carrying a deadly weapon. They were defined as that. And the guy said, "Hey, these were just a gift from my son. I didn't think they were a deadly weapon. I would never use them on anybody." And the judge was like, "Sure, I really believe you." So the guy pled no contest to that and got a fine. And then he said, "Judge, those were a gift. Can I get them back?" The judge was like, "No." So
you don't have to have a gun permit to carry a hammer, but you do need a building permit.
That's fair.
Did he have any nails?
No, it's just always just a hammer. No, like nothing else. I don't even know if he's a student.
What was it? Was he going to the VOTEC? Like, was he?
He's in shop class.
Maybe.
Yeah. This might not be legal advice, but this is just kind of like personal advice. I would steer clear of him.
Noted.
He's a board short of load.
He's a what?
A board short of load.
A board short. Okay. Oh.
It was a building joke attempt. Yeah.
You're working at it.
Yeah. He's not the sharpest tool in the box.
Well, thanks. I hope that answers your question a little bit. Sort of. I think the whole deadly weapon thing, if you're carrying it, it kind of goes to your intent. If you're walking to a job site and you have a hammer, you're probably cool. If you're carrying a baseball bat going to a baseball game, you're probably cool. If you're carrying a baseball bat going to your enemy's house, probably not cool. It's all about intent there. So I think they probably look at the intent.
Or you're a member of that gang in the Warriors.
Warriors, come out and play. Well, I think that's going to do it, which is going to bring us to...
Legal briefs. Did y'all join in? All right.
I don't know, did they?
I don't know. Should we give them another chance?
Yeah, one more time. So when we say briefs, you have to repeat after us, because this is our ending part of the show. So ready?
Legal briefs.
Oh, that sounded really
cool.
That
was good.
Yeah. So thank you for placating us. So legal briefs is the part of the show where we kind of wrap it up and we talk about different legal terms, which we discussed. Usually it's me asking Tommy if he remembers some legal term. Every now and then he'll ask me a question and I try to answer it. But usually it's me just grilling him like that deer on the thing.
That's right.
So, all right, the first question. What is a letter of marque?
It's the difference between being a pirate or a privateer.
That's right. And where do they come from?
They come from the government. They issue it, and they tell you who you can pirate and who you can't, and they tell you where you can pirate in. They're your piratey area there.
That was a little... different than how I explained it, I think, but that's the essential elements of it.
Well, there you go. I'm who, an what, essential
when,
guy.
Who, what, when, where, how. So, yeah, that's it.
All that stuff.
You nailed it.
Thanks. Just like the guy with a hammer.
What is the pirate code, and what was the main thing to come out of it?
Pirate code was, the workers' comp.
Well, that was the main thing to come out of it.
Yeah. Well, the pirate's code was an eye for an eye, I guess. an eye for an eye.
Well, pretty much, yeah. So the Pirate's Code was basically the rules that they set about on the ship, which actually they were kind of like a democracy on the ship, which was kind of different. But the main thing, like you said, to come out of it was workers' comp laws. Pirates actually were the genesis of all of our workers' compensation laws in a roundabout kind of way. So.
Yeah, so the next time you get a check when you're injured on the job, you owe it to some pirate somewhere that did that for you.
Sure, yeah. Mm-hmm. all right, this is going to be a tough one. Who helped me with my Sir Francis Drake report in the sixth grade?
I believe it was my wife, Mary.
That's true.
And saved your sixth grade career, or you wouldn't be a lawyer today.
That's right. I would have gotten an F in social studies for sure.
And flunked out of school, and you'd now be that guy carrying the hammer walking down the street.
All right, so here's another question. What did Sir Francis Drake die of?
He got it in the end. Dysentery.
Yeah, that's right. And now, can you describe to me what dysentery is? I know we didn't talk about this. This will be a bonus question.
It apparently is something that makes you a pretty poopy pirate.
I will tell you what dysentery is. I'm dying to tell you.
All right, tell me.
This is warming you up for Sawbones. Woo! They're not talking about dysentery tonight. I tried to talk him to do this little link up thing. We talk about dysentery, you talk about dysentery, but they didn't want to talk about dysentery.
I wouldn't want to talk about dysentery.
I know, I'm the only one who wants to talk about dysentery.
Cholera is a better disease.
You want to talk about cholera?
Well, I don't have the facts, but I know it killed half of Captain Kidd's crew there, or a third of them.
Well, dysentery, in case you did not know, is an infection of the intestines resulting in severe diarrhea with the presence of blood and mucus in the feces. Yeah.
Gee, that's a delightful note to end on.
And speaking of dysentery, this is to turn all about dysentery. What popular video game did people often die of dysentery?
I have no idea. I don't play video games.
The last
video game I played was Pong.
I think the crowd can answer this one for us.
Oregon Trail!
Oregon Trail!
How do you know that and you don't know about Rock on the Range? You gotta get with it. Oh.
Well, that's gonna
I'm
do
too
it.
Old to rock and roll.
That's gonna do it for Court Appointed tonight. Thank you guys for coming out, and thanks for being an awesome audience. Who's up next? Do we know?
Still Buffering.
Still Buffering is up next. So,
thank you.
Thank you very much.
Have a good night.
Give it up for Court Appointed. Woo! Thanks, guys.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcast for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well then, not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out though, right?
Usually.
Good.
This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurf. And I...